What role does religion play in the universe of Middle-earth? What importance do Tolkien's own religious beliefs have for informing our understanding of the world he created? Indeed, does one have to appreciate Tolkien's own religious beliefs in order to fully appreciate his stories? Join us as we begin our exploration of The Lord of the Rings and religion. The Tolkien Road, Episode 218, The Lord of the Rings and Religion. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 218. That's right, Episode 218.
Wow.
Lord of the Rings and Religion.
Sounds good.
Yeah. We got a barn burner of an episode.
Oh, I don't know that we've you've dropped that description as of yet.
A real old fashioned all American big tent revival of an episode coming here.
Ooh, y'all better buckle your seatbelts.
Replete with altar calls and
Whoa. Is anybody getting baptized?
Baptized in the
spirit. I can go inside and get some holy water.
Gotta be some snake handling and who knows what else.
Wow,
we're just gonna let the spirit move us here.
Maybe being slain, maybe some slaying of the spirit or in the spirit. Or
I mean, it wouldn't be Middle Earth without some slaying going on. I'm just
right?
saying.
Right, right. So, that is, you speak the truth.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is probably not going to involve any of that.
But we're glad you're still listening.
This is going to be a first and maybe an ongoing series, you know, maybe not every, like, you know, the next five episodes or six episodes, but maybe this is just going to be a topic we come back to because it's a pretty vast topic, this question of the Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth, and religion. And it's one that I've really been fascinated by for a long time and wanted to more deeply explore. But there's a bit of trailblazing going on here, and so there's more work and more thought that goes into it for me, and but this week we received a review on iTunes, mm-hmm. which was it actually wasn't a completely negative review.
Mm-mm.
The person wrote saying that they enjoyed the show and everything, but they were pretty critical of what they view as our injecting religion
mm-hmm.
into Tolkien's works.
Yep.
And so I thought that would be a great opportunity to address that question, right? To begin addressing the question of Middle Earth, Lord of the Rings, Tolkiendom, and religion.
Yeah, you know, I doubt that this particular reviewer is not the only person that feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he or she, I think there's, you know, they took the time to vocalize it, but I think, you know, I mean, it's funny with Thanksgiving coming up, it always reminds me of, you know, family get togethers and, you know, seeing people they haven't seen in a while, whatever. And they always say religion and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things. Those are the two topics that are like off limits.
Mm-hmm.
At Thanksgiving, Christmas, family reunions, all the things. And for good reason, right? I mean, they're both pretty hot topics.
Yeah.
And they have a tendency to be controversial. So I'm excited to get into this because I think there's probably a lot of people out there that maybe feel the same way.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, I kind of wish we could talk, you know, at family gatherings, we could talk more about politics and religion.
Too. And there probably are some families
fashion.
Out there that could.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a constructive fashion. That's the caveat.
That's
right?
The key because no one wants to go to, you know, no one wants to show up for a family gathering and have it turn really ugly because people, you know, people can't behave themselves, can't be civil with one another.
Right. Right. And especially religion is such an emotionally charged topic.
Sure.
And a very personal one at that.
Yeah.
So there's bound, you know, people have strong opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't hold back when it comes to talking about those things.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a skill to learn to being able to have those kinds of discussions without being inflammatory, right?
Right. I'm just saying. I think that religion, especially, is a topic that it takes more energy to control oneself.
Yeah.
Maybe than some other topics, just because it is something that people hold so close to their hearts.
Right.
Whatever it is that they believe.
Right.
It's a very personal and emotional feeling, decision, belief.
Yeah. So, well, that's what we're going to be talking about. That's where we're beginning a kind of a deep dive into on this episode, the role that religion plays in Middle Earth, both internally and externally. And by internally, I mean the role of religion in the stories, and then externally, how Tolkien's religious views shape the stories and their importance for understanding the stories. So, yeah, I'm really excited about beginning this, and, you know, we'll see where it all goes.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Hopefully we get lots of good correspondence coming off of this. So
I hope so, too.
But before we get started, we'd like to give a shout out to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producer, Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien. And we'd like to give a shout out to our newest patron, Matthew F. Thank you, Matthew, for becoming a patron.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. If you would like to become a patron, and why wouldn't you want to become a patron, you can head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out all the ways becoming a patron benefits you. And we will, as always, be eternally grateful to those who support us financially.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
most def.
All right. I'd also like to give a shout out to our longtime listener, Jennifer, for a tip that she left us, and a generous tip that she left us this week. So thank you, Jennifer,
your
support.
Yes, thanks,
that's always
Jennifer.
An option if you're not able to, you know, to do monthly, to do monthly support. Leaving a tip, right? Going to the episode webpage, and you can see that blue button right there that says leave a tip. And that's, that's a way to do a one-time, one-time tip,
cool.
One-time donation for us. So
it's a nice option.
And last but absolutely not least, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. Tell the world why you love our podcast,
So please.
Yeah. And thank you for everyone who has thus far.
Yeah.
All right. So one more thing before we dive in. This is actually Tolkien news. We have some good Tolkien news this week.
Cool.
I think a few months ago we may have seen it via the OneRing.net that there was going to be a book coming out in 2021, a new Tolkien book coming out in 2021. I think it's become a more official news now, because I saw it in many different places this week. But I want to give a hat tip to our patron Adam for being the first one to bring this news, the latest news, to my attention. But the headline from The Guardian is Unseen J.R.R. Tolkien Essays on Middle Earth Coming in 2021.
Ooh.
So I am psyched.
That's exciting.
I am psyched. I know what we're going to be talking about in 2021.
Yeah, we just got a whole lot of new material.
Man, oh man.
So awesome.
This is really cool. So some of the highlights that this article brings out are that these are really Tolkien diving into some of the issues that maybe we've always wondered about, right? Topics include elvish immortality and reincarnation. Fascinating. The nature of the Valar, the godlike spirits of Middle-earth. The lands and beasts of Numenor.
Cool.
The geography of the kingdom of Gondor, and even who had beards. So, so maybe, maybe we're finally going to settle the question of whether dwarven women had beards, once and for all. So, this is a very exciting collection for people who are Tolkien lovers like all of us, right?
People
who just want to read everything that Tolkien had to say about his imaginary world. It sounds like we're going to be getting some really interesting stuff to consider.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you're absolutely right. It's big news. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So 2021, we don't have anything more specific than that, huh?
I believe it's June of 2021.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So next summer.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So not that far. It'll be here before we know it. More than 6 months.
Not that far at all.
Mm-mm.
So
very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely very cool. All right. So very excited about that. And just also a reminder that my latest video, Tolkien versus the Nazis, is up on YouTube. So go over there, check it out, and subscribe to the Tolkien Road YouTube channel.
So, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Okay, Greta, you ready to talk about the Lord of the Rings and religion?
Dude, I've been ready.
Well, let's
do it. I was born ready.
Yeah, okay. So As I hinted before, on this episode, we are looking at a controversial issue, Lord of the Rings and religion. Specifically, we are going to be looking at a recent iTunes review for the Tolkien Road that criticized us for interjecting our own religious views into Tolkien's works. So let's take a look at the review. And this review is from Ettinger XR01 is what the name associated with it was. So I'll just refer to this reviewer as Ettinger. This is their review. I'm going to read the whole thing. The headline was, "Tolkien is a dish best served religionless." And then the body of the review: "I enjoy the podcast. It's pretty informative and easy to listen to until the hosts start to shoehorn their Christian religious beliefs into Tolkien's works and start telling people to pray communicatively that the good people at Amazon don't make a mess of the upcoming Lord of the Rings show by adding violence and sexuality. It's also rather painful to listen to them compare the fictional works of Tolkien with the fictional works of Christianity. If I wanted to hear a sermon, I'd go to church. Regardless, when they do manage to steer away from that garbage and into what the show is about, it is quite entertaining." So, well, let me first of all just start off by saying, you know, acknowledging the positive. You know, I'm glad that you listen, and I'm glad that you enjoy the podcast, other than the parts of the aspects that you mentioned. And I'm glad that you do find it entertaining.
Yeah, definitely.
I really am.
Definitely.
And I'm glad that you took the time just to share your thoughts. Mm-hmm. I really am.
We're always open to constructive criticism, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then I actually want to thank you for providing a springboard for me to sermonize.
How ironic.
Right. To sermonize on one of my favorite topics. Now, you know, I actually don't think this is a sermon. If I wanted to deliver sermons, I would do a religious podcast.
Right.
But you know, and I'm sorry that you feel that we sermonize on the podcast, but that's certainly not something that I actually think we do. We certainly speak passionately about various topics, mm-hmm. and things that are important to us. Mm-hmm. But a sermon is something that's actually involved in church. So, that you actually hear in the context of church. Thank you for providing that springboard for mm-hmm. me to kind of get into this and to really deal with this, one of my favorite topics, the fundamentally religious nature of the Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth. So I think the way I want to approach this is I want to deal with the two key complaints that are laid out here. So the first complaint is that we shoehorn our Christian beliefs into Tolkien's work. Shoehorn our Christian beliefs mm-hmm. into Tolkien's work. This criticism, I understand where you're coming from, but I think it's completely unfounded. I don't see how it makes any sense to say we shoehorn our beliefs. You might as well accuse Tolkien of shoehorning his beliefs into the Lord of the Rings, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, that's, and the image of the shoehorn, right? This like really thin thing that you have to use to fit your foot, into a shoe.
Well, it implies a forceful action.
It implies a forceful action in a really tight space.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just think this, I think that Ettinger here does not understand how important religion was for Tolkien in Middle Earth. Right.
Yeah.
In creating Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not a shoehorn. There's no matter of shoehorning here, mm-hmm. right? This is a matter of like what Tolkien himself actually said about his own works.
Right.
Right.
I think we've talked about this on previous podcasts.
Yeah.
And I know it came up in our episode about Tom Bombadil.
Yeah.
What he said in one of his letters about the Lord of the Rings. Can I just read it? Because you have it written there on the screen.
Well, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So in letter 142, Tolkien was mentioned. He says, and I quote, "Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work."
Yeah.
He says it was maybe not consciously so initially, but for sure consciously in the revisions.
In the revision, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this is letter 142, and it was actually correspondence with a Jesuit priest, right? So, you know, this was, and He had a couple of letters of correspondence that are collected in the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien on topics of religion and Lord of the Rings. So this is, I mean, that's Tolkien's own take on how important religion and Catholicism is to Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. right? He mm-hmm. himself says it is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work. So, I mean, that right there on its face would seem to indicate that it's not really a question that's up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
Religion, Christianity, Catholicism was extremely important to the creation of Lord of the Rings, and it would seem by extension Middle Earth, right?
And I think, you know, when someone takes their faith as seriously as Tolkien did, it's inseparable mm-hmm. from everything that you do.
Yeah.
I mean, it infuses everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, most of all the worldview, but everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see how you know, once you understand that
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to be a Catholic religion. I mean, whatever your choice of belief is,
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, it's inarguable that becomes your worldview. That's the lens through which you interpret everything.
Yeah.
And the lens through which you do what you do and how you do it.
Yeah, you might as well be arguing that you know, it's almost like Tolkien. You might as well be saying Tolkien is a dish best served Tolkienless, right? Like it's
because it's who he is.
It's like, it's a huge part of who he is. It's
right.
An undeniably huge part of who he is. And it's not us saying that, it's him saying that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, there might be people who consciously choose in creating something to put their personal beliefs or their religion on the back burner. But that was not the case with Tolkien, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I do sympathize with the notion that the Lord of the with arguing against the notion that the Lord of the Rings is a religious allegory. Tolkien,
oh, for sure.
Tolkien himself,
yeah.
We've dealt with that in the past on this show. Tolkien himself was very clear that he was not a fan of allegory, nor did he view any of his works of Middle Earth as allegories for anything, let alone Christianity. Right? He was not trying to and David from Pints with Jack might get mad at us, but people often and so apologies to David and to C.S. Lewis, because I know what he was doing with Chronicles of Narnia was actually more nuanced than this too. But people often think of The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and think to themselves, well, that's just like an allegorical retelling of the gospel story, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And I think you can make a case that there's a lot of like kind of one-to-one correspondence going on over there. But that's not at all what Tolkien saw himself as doing in Lord of the Rings, right? He says in the same letter, 142, that the religious element is absorbed into the story and the symbolism, right? It's almost like he looked back and he saw this as a work of, you know, it's almost like it's a how it parallels in certain ways and reflects deeper aspects of a Christian and Catholic worldview,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Of a view of that kind of cosmogonical view, right? The view of everything, right? Life, the universe, and everything. He says he consciously planned it very little, right? But looking back, as he went back and edited it and revised it, he couldn't help but recognize how much his faith had shaped the work. Okay. In other words, this was an unconscious outpouring of his heart. As someone who has, I talk about writing songs sometimes, which is a hobby of mine. And, you know, in the process of creating songs, the things that are on your heart and the things that have shaped you inform those songs.
Absolutely.
Right.
How can they not?
Exactly. Whenever an artist creates something, there's going to be maybe a conscious element of what they're trying to do, but there's also going to be the unconscious things of who they are that brought them to this point,
mm-hmm.
and the lens and the filter through which they view the world that are going to inform whatever it is they create.
Right.
So,
yep.
I think that's just a strong enough argument right there to say that, you know, Tolkien is a dish that you can't serve religionless, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a dish that is actually, it's the complete opposite, a dish that's underserved if you try to do it in a religionless fashion, right?
Right. You're not going to get the whole picture.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a truly authentic understanding of everything that Tolkien was trying to say and do.
And a good illustration of this is actually in the same letter, right before he says this, he talks about, I'm going to pull it up here just to have the exact quote. So with letter 142, he says, he refers to Our Lady, aka Mary, Jesus's mother, and says, upon which all my own small perception of beauty, both in majesty and simplicity, is founded. Right. Mm. You know, he specifically calls out the Virgin Mary as the foundation of his perception of beauty, right? Both in majesty and simplicity. So what he's saying there is the Galadriels, right? The majestic aspects of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are founded in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the simplistic beauty, right? The Hobbit,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's beautiful.
The idea of the Hobbit is founded in that as well. Okay. So
it's all encompassing.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is all encompassing. So, Edinger, you know, I'd be interested to hear your take on what Tolkien himself had to say in letter 142. To kind of continue on this topic, right, of the role of Christian beliefs into Tolkien's works, Tolkien, with Leif by Niggle, a story that has an undeniably religious character to it, he spoke about that as a somewhat allegorical account of his anxiety over completing Lord of the Rings. Right. So this was a story that he looked at and said, you know, this is kind of a religious reflection of my own existence, of my own life, and trying to complete, and his frustration, his anxiety over completing Lord of the Rings. All right. So, you know, again, like that may be more of a biographical note, but it is important, right, to having a deep understanding of where Tolkien was coming from. You know, you might as well, with many of these things, you might as well be arguing that, you know, Tolkien's love of languages doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Or his love of, Finnish mythology doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I mean, because they all contribute in large part to the Lord of the Rings as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
They all were significant influences in his writing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Furthermore, with On Fairy Stories, which is arguably the key to understanding how he viewed fantasy in general, Tolkien concludes by arguing that we live inside the true fairy story of the incarnation, aka the reality that God has become man and entered our own history, right? So the grand conclusion of his key essay on how he understood what he was doing, right, with telling these stories and what everybody was doing in telling these stories is that it's all connected to Christianity, right? It's all connected to the Christian story.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gets us into that idea that he connected so much of his mythology in it was almost like it was a pre-Christian myth, right? Like that it was a view of the world, and he viewed it as actually taking place in our own world and in a kind of
mysterious universe,
way, right?
Maybe
not even in a parallel universe, but as a fictional myth that takes place in our own world, right? A fictional pre-Christian myth that takes place, you know, thousands of years ago in our own world.
Okay.
So, you know, and we see that again by the markers for that are, you know, all over his various writings. But, you know, we've dealt with that kind of topic when talking about like March 25th, right? And the significance
of that date.
Yeah,
I was just thinking
about
that. Yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a very intentional marker on his part, right?
Yeah,
and it wasn't just kind of like, well, I'll throw this in as a little religious nod, you know, religious wink to my religious readers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was him literally saying that date is almost like a fated date for important events in the history of mankind, right? In the history of the world,
yeah,
right,
absolutely.
So,
and even on that note, you know, we're just talking. Is it in On Fairy Stories where he coins the term eucatastrophe?
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, I mean, that in and of itself, that term eucatastrophe was, you know, and didn't he even say the greatest eucatastrophe of all time was the resurrection?
Right, the death and resurrection.
The death
and
resurrection.
Yeah. Of Christ.
Of Christ, right? And obviously looking at the Lord of the Rings, you know, the destruction of the ring is clearly the eucatastrophe of the Lord of the Rings. So, you know, it's just, it's really hard to, you know, when he says stuff like that, and then you read Lord of the Rings, you're like, how can these two not be, how can they not go together?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can they not be reflections of one? I mean, they're different, obviously, but they're clearly in the same vein.
Yeah.
I mean, the crucifixion and resurrection versus the, you know, the destruction of the ring, both being eucatastrophes. I mean, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like, it's not always easy to explain how these things are working, because it wasn't like, you know, again, it wasn't like he was just like, well, I'm going to set out to tell the story of Christianity, but with hobbits.
Right. Right.
Right. That's not what he did.
Mm-mm.
And so one of the reasons we even do this show, and a vast topic and understanding Tolkien, right, and being interested in going deeper into the things of Tolkien, is understanding his complex view on the relationship of religion and his own religion to the stories of Middle Earth.
Right.
I mean, it's a vast topic.
It is.
And it's almost like you have to put blinders on to pretend like it doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. like huge blinders, right? to pretend mm-hmm. like it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to continue on this topic, there are numerous other facets of this argument to be made. Letter 156 is a much longer letter than 142. It's also to the same Jesuit priest. And it's a must read if you want to be educated on this topic. And, and there's so many other references that I could lay out that, you know, that deal with questions of this nature from Tolkien himself. Letter 156, in fact, is one we might just spend a couple episodes exploring at some point, because there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there.
Okay.
So, maybe I kind of hope that maybe with this collection of essays, Tolkien will talk a little bit more, you know, deal a little bit more specifically with, kind of the religious nature of internally of Middle Earth, right? Questions of like the religion of Numenor, which mm-hmm. we've talked some about,
we have.
Right?
Yep.
And even talking about like kind of the religious nature of elves, right?
Mm-hmm.
They obviously mm-hmm. have a very strong devotion to Varda, right?
Yeah.
To Elbereth,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and their relationship to the, you know, to the Valar. At the end of the day, you go all the way back and it's like Ilúvatar, right? The All-Father, right? He's there. There is a God. There is a supreme God, the one who underlies all things, which is very similar to the Christian understanding of God right there at the very foundation of the mythology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. I was thinking too, I feel like I can kind of understand and relate to where Effinger, is that his name?
Ettinger
is coming from, because I wasn't raised Catholic, but I was a Christian, but anyway, not Catholic, but I feel like in a way those of us who maybe are Catholic or Christian, at least maybe have a little bit of a leg up on this stuff.
Sure.
Because we're not, you know, like we've kind of been raised on this with this worldview of just maybe not just like Catholicism, but Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, you know, like we already have that. Maybe we're just a little bit more open minded to start with because we are familiar with, you know, with the Bible, and we are familiar with different religions. Anyway, I just want to say that I don't want to take for granted the fact that understanding all this stuff comes so easily to me, because mm-hmm. I can understand how it wouldn't come so easily to other people.
Right.
So anyway, for what it's worth.
Yeah. Well, and our goal is never to make anyone feel like this is being, you know, shoved
no,
down their throats.
No, we never, ever want to feel that. No.
I mean, quite honestly, and I know that people have their reasons for being averse to specific religions or, religion in general.
For
even.
Sure,
So if you need to fast forward through certain parts because it just puts you off, mm-hmm. I I'm sad to hear that, but I understand. And we're always willing to, like, I think the thing is, like, take issue with specific arguments, right? Like, you know, tell me where I'm wrong on a specific argument, but to just in general say, well, it's Tolkien is a dish best served religionless. Mm-hmm. It's just mind boggling, right? Yeah. It's like, what?
Yeah, I know, but I am very
Tolkien is a. I mean, I truly feel like it is again like saying Tolkien is a dish best served Tolkienless.
Right, because Tolkien and religion they just really are inseparable. But I'm grateful for this opportunity to dialogue about this because I think it's really important.
Yeah,
especially if you want to get a full understanding.
Yeah.
of Tolkien and his works.
Yeah, and to wrap up on that first. On dealing with that first complaint, I think what I would say is you can't fully appreciate where Tolkien was coming from unless you appreciate these ideas, right? And that's what we're going for, is a fuller mm-hmm. appreciation on the
right.
show.
Yeah,
I'm sure many people read Lord of the Rings and it never crosses their mind that any of it is related to religion or Christianity at all. And I totally get that. And I'm not saying that those people can't enjoy the Lord of the Rings just as the Lord of the Rings, as a mere story, right?
Right. Yeah.
But this podcast is the podcast for Tolkien lovers. Right? We are nerds about it. We go deep into Tolkien. We want to understand everything about it. And so in order to achieve that, one thing that Greta and I hope that we can contribute to the community of Tolkien lovers out there is the perspective of devout Catholics, of people who shared Tolkien's religious views.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And to be able to maybe, I don't know, Catholicsplain a little bit. Right. So,
oh boy.
Anyway, moving on, complaint two, Ettinger says it's painful to listen to us, to Greta and I, compare the fictional works of Tolkien with the fictional works of Christianity. Kind of a bomb there.
Yeah.
Not sure what works you were referring to here. The Gospels, the Narnia Chronicles. I guess it all depends on what works of Christianity you were referring to. If it's an attack on the Gospels, this isn't an apologetic show. Mm-hmm. However, I'd be happy to recommend some resources for better understanding the historical veracity of the Gospels if you want to reach out to me directly at TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. I actually enjoy, you know, those kinds of topics, and I've been a Christian all my life. I've had people come at me every which way about, you know, how, you know, it's just not true and, you know, it's all a bunch of bunk, and no one's ever convinced me otherwise. They've mm-hmm. presented a lot of good arguments, and somehow my brain just can't, you know, it just keeps coming back to, no, it looks like it's true to me.
Yeah.
Right. It looks like Jesus Christ actually rose from the dead.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's been times I've wanted myself to be unconvinced of it. Right. There's been dark times in my own life where I've wanted, you know, I've been like, maybe all this stuff just isn't true. And every time I've tried to honestly address the question, I keep on coming back to it being true. So, you know, do with that what you will. But furthermore, I'd really like to ask you, what's painful about it?
Yeah, I don't like
right?
that. Like, that's kind of where it hit me in the gut. Like painful.
Well, let me just continue my.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to reiterate that I just don't like the word painful.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, if it's all fiction, then isn't that what comparative literature is all about? Right, like. I mean, you know, when you study, you know, sometimes you'll study two works side by side. So what's painful about that, right? If you truly think that the Gospels are just fictional works, they're still works of literature.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, if any work you're talking about, right? Whatever written work you're talking about, if they can help us understand better Tolkien's own work, then what's painful about that?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Now, the painful point might be that you kind of think that it's not fiction, right? That maybe it's not actually fiction. And if it's not actually fiction, you should find it absolutely fantastic news that you and everyone you love will one day be raised from death and live in an eternal paradise. Right?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
you know, again, like I'd ask you to kind of maybe ask yourself, what's painful about it? What truly is painful about it? And I'm happy to dialogue with you and with anyone else who wants to write and correspond about such things. You know, it would be a joy to do so. And I have corresponded with others about similar issues. So,
yeah, I mean, it could just be as simple as, you know, maybe it's a visceral reaction mm-hmm. to the stories of the Bible. I'll admit I have a visceral reaction to some things.
Sure.
You know, some works of literature, some music, and maybe that's it, you know, and it's sometimes not always explainable. Yeah, I'd be interested to know as well,
mm-hmm.
like what is painful about it? Because I think, you know, as I was kind of thinking through what, you know, about this episode and what we're going to talk about and all the things, I think what I wanted to be sure to get across in this is that, I'm not saying I'm perfect at this at all, but just encourage everyone that's listening just to have an open mind.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to buy in to every theory, every comparison, every, you know, similarity, whatever, but just have an open mind and be willing to accept that there is some truth out there that might be hard to accept.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that, you know, like maybe troubles me most about this is it is a very myopic, like narrow-sighted, closed-minded view of mm-hmm. Tolkien.
Yes.
And yes. And to me, it's just the same as being like, could I please just talk about Tolkien stories without having to worry about any of that language stuff, right?
It's very superficial as well.
Well, and I'm like, yeah, sure. You don't have to listen to people talk about the language stuff, mm-hmm. right? If that's not something that interests you.
Or maybe all the intricate geographical details that
right,
you know, that John loves to wax poetic on.
But you're basically saying like, I just don't want to nerd out about Tolkien in that way. Why would it not be okay for others to do the same, to do that if that's what they find fascinating, right?
Right.
So yeah, I like what you're talking about with being open minded. I think that's kind of what it comes back to is like, it makes no sense based on all the overwhelming mountain of evidence that religion is not a huge factor in having a deeper appreciation of Tolkien's works.
Right.
And that's what we're all about here, is having a deeper appreciation of Tolkien's works.
Exactly. And we can't separate that from religion.
Yeah.
From Tolkien. Yeah.
So in the final account, is Tolkien a dish best served for religionless? No way. I would argue we wouldn't even have Middle Earth if it weren't for Tolkien's religious beliefs.
I think that's fair.
I'm not, and maybe we'll spin off on that on another, another episode. But I'm not going to say that you have to be religious or understand Tolkien's religion in order to enjoy his works.
Or even be Catholic.
No.
Well,
that falls under being
not religious. I'm just getting a little more specific. That's all.
Yeah. But I will say that the more fully you appreciate his religious views, the better your appreciation and enjoyment of the works of Middle Earth will be.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing would apply to languages, Norse mythology, and any number of other influences that have been noted as important in the formation of these stories. You know, Beowulf, what life is like in a small village in England, Tolkien's experiences in World War I,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things, they matter. They inform a person's story, an artist's story informs the art that they create.
Yes.
So, Edinger, from one Tolkien lover to another, I'd invite you to reconsider what you say here. The bottom line is, I think you were robbing yourself of a deeper appreciation and enjoyment of Tolkien by forcing such a myopic view upon Tolkien's works. So I hope you reconsider, and I hope you'll feel free to correspond with me directly.
Please.
Love to hear from you again.
Yeah, both would. Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure.
All right. Correspondence time.
Boom, boom. Let's do it.
I mean, I guess that was basically just one long correspondence, so.
I guess it was. we'll just call this the correspondence episode.
Although it was a review,
episode.
So I'm not exactly sure it was a, it was correspondence per se, intended to be correspondence per se.
Well, you include iTunes comments in our correspondence section.
I do, definitely. Yeah. It's a public review. You know.
But, you know, maybe at the very least, it'll just be like you said, a springboard to explore this topic a little deeper.
Absolutely.
You know, using Tolkien's letters and stuff.
Well, we'll start off with a 100% positive 5-star review that we also received in the last week. Let me see if I can find that, y'all.
Come on, come on. You can do it.
I can do this.
Yes, you can.
Where is it?
I don't know.
I got it. I got it. I got it.
Do you, though? You know, I hate awkward silence.
All right. Oh, incredible and insightful.
Cool.
5 stars.
Woo.
I am a Tolkien lover. Don't worry. I'm not just a Tolkien liker. I love it. Who recently found this podcast on Spotify. This is exactly what I've been looking for to help me better understand Tolkien's amazing books and the meanings behind them. I've always regretted that I was never able to ask J.R.R. and or Christopher Tolkien questions about the Legendarium, but through this podcast, I can find the answers to those questions. Thank you for the Tolkien Road.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening.
And I can definitely sympathize with, you know, being... being disappointed, being sad that, you know, you don't have J.R.R. or Tolkien or you know, Christopher with us anymore to, you know, to ask these deeper questions.
For sure, yeah.
Because what a joy it would be if we did. But that's why we have, that's why we're doing this podcast, and we're just thrilled that you love it. So
yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
All right, we have a couple of Facebook comments I wanted to mention in response to our last episode, our interview with Solomon Schmidt on the...
Tour
he's going to be leading.
Awesome. That was so fun.
That was fun. So, and you need to go check that out, right? Historybytes.com/tour is where you can learn more. Listen to our interview with Solomon, and you need to do yourself a favor and strongly consider, you know, going on that tour next summer. So, but the first comment for the post was from Ron on Facebook. Ron was a little angry that we included that Rowling, I think, was included with Lewis and Tolkien. So Ron says, wait, that seems ironic that Ron was mad about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Seeing as he had a namesake in the books, you mean? Is that what you mean?
Well, maybe that's what he's upset about, because Ron is kind of, you know, they're differing opinions on
differing
Ron.
Differing opinions.
Anyway,
yes.
So sorry, Ron. Real Ron. Ron says, do not put Rowling in with those two men, not even close to the same pay grade. She dwarves them all in sales. I like
was
the
that. That was
like
that an intentional pun? Yeah.
That's nice. I like the pun there. But to compare her prose to Tolkien's or her thoughts to Lewis is just blasphemy. God bless her. Hope she is happy, but a great thinker and literary genius she is not. They are.
You know, I can't really take issue with that. I mean, I do love Harry Potter. I love me some Harry Potter.
I do too.
And let's just say maybe Rowling is a part of this tour more for geographical reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe. And she was definitely influenced, right?
Yeah.
By the literature of Tolkien and Lewis. But I kind of have to agree. Her writing is definitely not...
Well,
the same.
I'd want to hear. Ron's kind of throwing down, and I'd love to hear a Rowling fan respond to that. Of which I'm sure there are many. That would take issue with what he has to say there. But I'm a Tolkien guy, so you know, of course, and I'm also a Lewis guy, so of course, I agree with Ron. To some degree, but. I'm not so inclined to hate towards her. To me, it's like each of the three do something really well, right? And do certain things really well.
Yeah.
Right? There's no doubt that Rowling owes a huge debt of gratitude to what Tolkien and Lewis did before her,
mm-hmm.
and took a lot of influence from them. I also really appreciate the specific genius of the universe she herself created.
I do too.
And really enjoy it. So.
I do too.
So
yes,
I'm not sure. It all depends on what you're comparing, right? Like, what aspects are you comparing? Yes.
Well, she said he specifically says a great thinker.
Yeah.
And literary genius, she is not.
Great thinker.
Great, you know,
I would definitely. Well, I would say that she's maybe not. I don't want to like put her down, her mm-mm. thoughtfulness down. She's obviously very intelligent. But I would agree that maybe she's not the same level thinker that Lewis or Tolkien were. Who is, right? Very few people would be.
Right. She's not a professor.
But I think there's something to her being a literary genius. Now, she may not be it depends on what aspects of literary genius you're talking about there, because there's a lot of them, right? She created something that millions... It's kind of like saying that, that... Who is the guy that created... just pick your favorite hugely successful movie, which may not be like the Academy Award winning movie, but it's hugely popular. right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you're going to say that that person isn't a cinematic genius, right? Like, they are. They may not be a cinematic genius in the sense of, like, making the film that the Oscar is going to go to every year, but, you know, there's a difference between the cinematic genius of, like, the Coen brothers mm-hmm. and the cinematic genius of George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, the Coen brothers make movies that you know, you're every time you see one, you're just like, this movie is like genius. It just blows your mind, like, you know, genius, but it's on another kind of higher level, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lucas made something that is not what the Coen brothers do, but it's inspired the imaginations of so many people, right?
Yeah.
To an incredible degree. So, you know, I think you have to be more specific with literary genius, what aspect of literary genius you're talking about.
Probably. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she was not a philologist, mm-hmm. right? I mean, she was not blessed to be part of the Inklings. So, you know, there's definitely some, you know, differences there, but I think she rounds out this tour in a nice way.
I absolutely do too.
And, you know, she is the reason that our middle child would actually agree to go on this tour with us. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, not that he wouldn't enjoy some Tolkien and Lewis, but Harry Potter is his thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a way to maybe appeal to a wider audience for the tour too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just a matter of the, anyway, I think we've done a good job of dealing with Ron's comment. Ron, thank you for your comment.
Yes. And, thank you.
You know, for sharing your thoughts on the tour.
Definitely.
The other comment is from Monique, who is a patron of ours. Thank you, Monique.
Mm-hmm.
She says, looks wonderful. I would be so tempted to go from here to New Zealand to do Lord of the Rings tours. You can even spend 90 minutes at the Weta Workshop. Yeah, that would be really cool.
What is the Weta Workshop?
That's like the special effects and workshop that, that did all of the Lord of the Rings
films.
Like
for the movies and stuff. Okay. All so, right. Cool.
I 100% agree. 100%
agree,
Monique.
Does look wonderful. Yes.
Yeah. So, thanks, Monique.
Thank you, guys.
All right, and a few emails to look at, and these are actually kind of related topics on the subject of religion, and I think these emails will actually be springboards for future episodes in the Lord of the Rings and religion series. The first is from Jennifer, way back, longtime listener Jennifer, way back in September. Jennifer left a comment on episode 209 and said, here's my response to all of the conspiracy theorists who claim that Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were involved with the occult and witchcraft. So this has been something Jennifer has actually asked me several times. Hey, would you do an episode or do a video on this topic sometime? Because she's seen videos out there that accuse Tolkien and Lewis of actually, it's kind of like the opposite argument, right? Of what we dealt with today, that Tolkien and Lewis were like, actually secretly occultists and into witchcraft and this kind of thing. So Jennifer offered her own thoughts in response to some of these videos she's seen. She says, the difference between Christian adventure fantasy and occult and witchcraft literature is like day and night. There is such a huge difference between the intentions and purposes of the former group of writers versus the latter group. Tolkien and Lewis used Christian elements, themes, symbolism, and allegory in their works. Like, duh, the ring is evil and has to be destroyed, and how can anyone not know that Aslan is Christ? These people need to learn how to distinguish between the Christian writers and the anti-Judeo-Christian writers and do some serious research.
Mm-hmm.
And she just says, what do other listeners of this podcast think of these claims?
Yeah.
So it's a great question if anyone else wants to share their thoughts. But I do think I'll look at this topic, you know, we'll look at this topic here in the not too distant future
okay.
of Tolkien and maybe we'll include Lewis. Maybe we can do a crossover episode with, you know, with David of Pints with Jack on the question of
Tolkien.
And Lewis, and because they had a very interesting relationship with pagan views of the world, because they were both so interested in ancient mythologies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And they actually worked them into their own fiction in some very surprising ways,
okay.
right?
Okay.
To where it might appear to some, right, that they're almost that the works are more pagan than they are Christian. So. It's a great question, Jennifer,
yeah,
and you know, thanks
topic.
For sharing your thoughts on
mm-hmm.
it, and you know, just stand by. We'll get to it here hopefully soon.
Yeah.
A more full exploration of that topic here soon. We also have a recent note from Holly on Tolkien and paganism. Holly says, Hello, I'm a fairly new listener, only joining in January of this year, and have greatly enjoyed your podcast. You've mentioned several times your faith and Tolkien's faith on the episodes. I've noticed Tolkien's fantasy bears some pagan symbology, and I'm wondering if he ever worried that his fantasy series was contradicting his religion. Did he ever not put something in thinking it would lead someone away from Christ's Christianity? Was there a line he would not cross? I would love to hear you speak on this subject in a future podcast, or please let me know if one has already touched on this. Again, I love your podcast and hope it continues for many years to come. Best wishes.
Aww.
So,
thanks.
Holly, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
It's really nice to hear from you. And again, I think this is a great question and one that we'll definitely be looking at in some depth in the not too distant future. Stick around, stand by, and keep listening.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this.
You asked some really good
this,
questions.
For sure. Yeah, I was like, oh, we're not going to respond to this here, are we? Because that would take forever.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm not prepared to respond to it
yes,
right now.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts on it, but I'm going to save those until we get to the episode.
Sounds good.
So, and then our last piece of correspondence this week is from, actually, a quick one from our patron Riff, who just says, thank you both for brightening up my day with each new podcast.
Aww. Well, that's awesome.
Thank you for brightening up our day with thanking us.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really cool. Thank
appreciate,
you, Riff.
Appreciate it, Riff.
Yeah.
And then we have a note just here received just in the last 24 hours from our patron, Paige. Paige says, hey, John. Hey, Greta. Paige here, messaging all the way from Norway. I was accepted to a master's program. I was able to arrive this past summer when coronavirus wasn't so bad. I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts lately and reading a lot of Tolkien. As always, your thoughtful discussion has been a blessing, especially during this very stressful year. Awesome.
Yes, that's great.
She goes on to say, with Advent season coming up, I was wondering if Catholics celebrate Christmas with an Advent wreath. As an Episcopalian, we have a lot in common with Catholics, but I wasn't sure about that particular tradition. Each Sunday, a new candle is lit, symbolizing different things. The prophet's candle representing hope, the angel's candle representing peace, the shepherd's candle representing joy, and the Bethlehem candle representing love. Finally, on Christmas, a Christ candle is lit to represent the light of God coming to the world through Jesus. Pause there. There's more that I'll read in just a moment. But the short answer is absolutely.
Yes, right. And I want to say thank you, Paige, for reminding me to buy my Advent candles because it always sneaks up on me.
Because Advent's like 2 weeks away, right?
I was thinking about that. Yeah. Is it? I think it's less than
2 weeks.
It's
usually after Thanksgiving, after American Thanksgiving, there's another week and then there's Christ.
Oh, is there a whole week?
Usually.
I thought Christ the King was this Sunday.
Well, let's check.
I thought it was.
Now you got us checking calendars.
Now you got us catching. I'm like, do I need to go to the store today? Does Advent start Monday?
Let's see here.
So we do celebrate Advent with an Advent wreath, actually.
Maybe we better get our act together pretty quick.
At least my Advent wreath is ready to go. We might have some candles left over from last year.
I'm trying to find our liturgical calendar here. Let's see. Where is that? Let's just do Christ the King Sunday 2020.
Ah, it's tomorrow.
sneaking up on us.
Oh my goodness. So
yikes.
Wait, does that mean that?
That means that
Advent starts next Sunday or does it start Monday?
I believe it starts next Sunday. Let's see. Advent 2020. Starts Sunday, November 29th.
Okay, so we got another week.
Exactly.
Phew, okay.
Yeah, so to get back to your question, Paige, yes, absolutely. Advent, we use an Advent wreath as Catholics. It's used in Catholic churches, it's used in many Catholic homes. We light it, we light a candle every night, usually at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down with the kids at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And we sing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we don't... I have never called the candles by those names.
I haven't either.
I like that.
I know that they represent different things,
mm-hmm.
The different virtues and things.
Yeah.
But I can never remember which is which.
It'd be interesting to see if they corresponded, if the Sunday readings corresponded to those things.
Hmm.
The prophets, the angels, and then the shepherds.
Yeah. I know we light the pink one on the third Sunday of Advent.
Yeah.
I know that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And that one has something to do with joy. What is it? Is that Gaudete Sunday?
It's Gaudete Sunday. Yeah, so it would be joy.
There's a joy Sunday in Advent, and there's a joy Sunday in Lent, and I can never remember which one is Gaudete.
One is Gaudete, and one is... Oh, geez, I'm totally blanking. No, maybe Lent is Gaudete.
Maybe that is.
No. I think it's Advent. One is starts with an L, I think.
Yeah.
Latare,
yeah.
Is that Advent?
I think that might be Lent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, she says in her message here, the shepherd's candle is the third one that she mentions, and that represents joy. So I think the virtues may be the same. I'm just not familiar with those names.
Mm-hmm.
Although your grandparents were Episcopalian, and they always use an Advent wreath as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, that's where I was inspired to decorate my Advent wreath with little red cardinals, because that's what your grandmother always did.
Yeah.
I didn't foresee the fact that our cats would think they were real
and attack them
and bite their heads off. So anyway, we'll have to get new cardinals for this year.
Cat's going to do what cat's going to do.
Yes.
Well, Paige goes on to say, I think Tolkien had a lot to say about each of these subjects throughout his works and letters. And after listening to more of your podcasts, I couldn't help but notice many parallels. I was wondering if you guys would consider spending time talking about each of these elements in a Christmas episode.
Oh.
I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Hope all is well for both of you.
I love the idea of a Christmas episode.
I do too. I'd have to think some about how to approach doing that. I think Paige may be referring to I don't know. That might be an interesting topic to explore. So we'll have to look.
You know,
it
also just popped into my brain with the Christmas episode is it might be fun to do some of the Father Christmas letters. That Tolkien. I know we have a copy of it. And I've actually never read them.
Yeah, it's right up there on my bookcase.
Yeah, I think we got you a copy for Christmas one year.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
We're just throwing a lot on you all at once here.
Because this podcast is going to go on forever. You know, we got time. We'll eventually get there. I don't know if it'll be this year, but
okay.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe just like a special episode for our patrons or something. It might be fun.
Now you're getting me to do special episodes for.
We could just read it and then talk about it.
Maybe I'll have you do a special episode by yourself.
Oh.
Special episodes with Greta.
Hey, you know what? If people want it, I'll do it.
You heard it here, folks.
But wait, would that just be me reading?
I'll just let Greta, you know, plan her special episodes and I'll go kick back and, you know.
Wait, would you still produce them for me? Like, would you get me set up and produce them? Because I don't know any of that stuff.
Maybe.
It might be a kind of a fun thing for me to you know, because I never do any of the prep. Yeah. I just kind of show up and talk.
And we might end up having to edit this part out so that we don't go on record as saying all these things, too. So,
like what things? Oh, about the special episodes. Okay.
Committing ourselves to special episodes.
Well, good thing we're not live.
Patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Please give generously. Paige, thank you so much.
Yes, Paige, thank you.
It's great to hear from
you. Always great hearing
from you. And yeah, happy Advent.
Yes, happy Advent, and stay warm up there in Norway.
Yes, send pictures.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, I believe that's everything. Hey, we'd love to hear from any and all of you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, etc.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. So.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks so much to our patrons. You guys rock. And thanks especially to the following patrons: Shannon S.,
Brian O.,
Emilio P.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
James L.,
Chris L.,
Chuck F.,
Asya V.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C.,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D.,
Eric S.,
Joey S.,
Eric B.,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Matt L.,
Johanna T.,
Ms. Anonymous,
and Sam N.
Thank y'all.
Thank you all so much, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye.
Bye.